Tommy, Tommy.
Oh, Tommy.
Here with the gravy, Davy.
Davy.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. How about tomato, Plato?
Plato.
Here's got your Tora, Dora.
Oh, Dora.
Try the bologna, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Everybody eats when they come to my
Welcome
house.
Welcome to Say Yes to the Chef. Our guest today is Danielle White, and she's the owner of Chocolate Confections. And I'm Janice Escott, a certified Cordon Bleu chef and instructor. Good morning, Kelly.
Hello, I am Chef Kelly Taylor. How are you today?
We're fine today, and we have something delicious to talk about today. So good morning, Danielle.
Good morning.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
So tell us about Danielle. How did you start all this wonderful delicious stuff?
Well, my husband Matthew, who's the other half of Chocolate Confections, started it as a hobby. Our now 9-year-old son was born with severe peanut allergies. And at that time, we didn't have a lot of options of things that he could eat that were safe. So what started off as a hobby, making candy for him so that he wasn't upset when we were trick-or-treating or going to birthdays and things like that, it just really turned into a passion and something that we were like, wow, we really want to do this. And it resonated. So it kind of grew from there.
Is that because there's peanuts in the menu? Because there are peanuts not in everything, right? But
yes,
there are peanuts in facilities? Or how does that allergy?
Well, back then, labeling was not as precise as it is now. Mm-hmm. Like now when you buy something in a store, it'll say manufactured in equipment that
contains peanuts
yes, or tree nuts, or mm-hmm, it will say may contain if they're using the same chocolate, so remelting the chocolate and using it again. Back then, you didn't know. So even if it didn't have peanuts, if it didn't have that allergy warning, we had to stay away from it because we just didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to be very specific about it saying peanut free. And at that time, there wasn't a lot of options, as many as there are now.
Right. They do a better job of the major allergens, mm-hmm, alerting us to the major allergens.
Definitely.
But I forgot that was only like a short time ago where they weren't doing that.
No.
It was only 9 years ago. You know, that nothing was labeled properly. That's pretty amazing, actually. I hadn't really thought of it until you were talking to me right now, how far we've come.
Yes. I mean, even in general, even when you think about chocolate itself, I don't remember 15, 10 years ago really worrying about where the chocolate came from. Chocolate to me at that time was chocolate.
Yeah.
It was either dark chocolate, milk chocolate, or, you know, white chocolate.
Oh,
right. Thinking about farms and sustainability and is it organic or fair, like,
nothing.
It was just candy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So it was through his allergy and us. We don't have allergies in our family. So we had to start reading labels and sort of get that education on, okay, so if it says this, it means that. And if it's manufactured in an equipment, it may be safe, but we weren't sure. So that was our sort of introduction to really starting to notice the ingredients and the process that goes into the food, the candy, everything that you purchase, everything that you eat.
Mm-hmm. And there are other places where nuts are also in other packaged foods.
Yes.
So you have to be careful about that, too. Where are those other places that you have to look?
So, interestingly enough, now by reading the label, I can pretty much tell, mm-hmm, if it's a safe product or not. And I'll give you a perfect example. We were at a commercial kitchen where Luna Pops does their delicious popsicles.
Oh, yes.
And I noticed that when, mm-hmm, I bought their popsicles that it says manufactured in a kitchen that also, you know, works with peanuts, tree nuts, or whatever it is. But with the way they're set up, it's not really around them. But, mm-hmm, they make that disclosure so that you are informed as a consumer and then you can decide. Because some people have allergies that are airborne.
Mm-hmm.
Our son can't ingest them.
Uh-huh.
They can be next to him. He just can't eat it. There are people that can't even be in the room with it. I mean, mm-hmm, it's that severe.
Mm-hmm. I had a student one time who was that way with eggs. Every time we actually cooked with eggs, she had to leave the room.
Oh, wow. See?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and
it was very serious.
Yeah. And in the farm, we sell at the farmer's market. And a lot of times I make sure to make that distinction when someone says, I'm staying away from gluten or I'm staying away from dairy or nuts or whatever it is, that we talk about how severe is the allergy. Are you just... Mm-hmm. Is it some like a diet restriction? Is it a severe allergy? Is it airborne? Does it have to be ingested? And then we can have that conversation from there and see if it's something that's safe for them to eat.
I think it's refreshing to come across a vendor or, you know, a maker of food who actually can have that conversation, though.
Yeah.
Because, mm-hmm, a lot of people can't understand why it's important to have that discussion. It's just something, because, and this might have been what you were saying earlier, before your son had an allergy, you didn't have allergies in your family. No one thought about it. No one talked about it. And so if you are never having to deal with it, then when somebody comes and talks to you, you just don't even know how to talk about it, what might be important that you're leaving out. So it's really probably very nice for people to be able to say, okay, well, here's what I can and can't do without any judgment about those things, and just trying to find something that will actually work for them. So I think it's probably very nice for people who have allergies. It is for me, because I have some. And so I understand that being able to talk to the person who makes my food is important anyway, but also being able to talk to the person who makes my food who understands what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Without, like, you know, having to go into this whole big explanation or justification almost for what it is that you can and cannot have.
Well, there's definitely more consciousness now. I think that we're all, even if it's someone who doesn't have allergies, everyone is becoming much more aware of what's in their food, how it may affect them or someone else. And I think that with allergies growing now, I don't know what's going on with that, but more and more people are it's hitting home for them. Even if it's not them personally, they'll know someone. They'll have a grandchild, a son, a sister. And so people just want to know more. You know, they're really interested in knowing what's in their food and where it's coming from.
And we really encourage people to read labels. It's absolutely vital. No matter what you're eating, when you're buying something in a package and it has a list of ingredients, it's very important to look at those ingredients.
Definitely.
And see what they are, even if they don't have allergies. But to know that if it contains high fructose corn syrup, for instance, which is so many places, and we know that it's addictive now. And so when someone has a package of something and they offer it to me, I look at the label first, because I really want to know what's in that particular food.
Definitely.
Just for my own health and my own safety and all of that. Although I don't have allergies that I know of anyway, I still want to know what's in that food.
But then you have to be able to read it and understand what those things are.
Right.
Sometimes that's its own issue.
Exactly. And when you don't understand what they are,
you put it back down.
Put it back down and say, I don't think I want this.
You can't pronounce it.
That's right. You know,
and candy has a lot of, like, if you buy candy on the shelf, there's a lot of crazy things in candy. Yeah.
And sometimes 4 or 5 different sugars.
Yes.
And some of them are not recognizable as sugar.
Right. And so some of them are all the food colorings and all the
preservatives.
I'm trying to think what's in candies that people are alarmed about these days. I'm not sure. I don't know that I buy enough candy and look at the wrapper to pay attention, other than aspartame, which is in a lot of stuff, and fake sweeteners.
Oh, and the high fructose corn syrup is a really big one.
It is.
And we make a peppermint patty, and the hardest thing to source has been the corn syrup that's non-GMO, that does not have high fructose corn syrup, that's organic. That there's only one company right now that offers it.
No.
Wow.
Yes.
That's amazing.
So that's been, and we had a lot of customers that would come to us, and if they see corn syrup, it's this assumption that it is high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
We have to make that very clear. Like, we don't use anything that has high fructose corn syrup, but that's a big one.
That's interesting.
A lot of times, customers don't even know why. Like, I just know it's bad, or I don't want it, or soy is another big one, too.
Yes. Well, that's a high allergen as well, plus its own laundry list of other things that it does.
Yeah.
But that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
The sugar, I think, in today's world might be the whole thing about, especially for a candy maker, right? It's sugar.
Yeah.
So understanding the different types of sugars and how to use them and when to use them in candy making, because you use different sugars for different things. So I imagine that is a challenge in its own right, understanding how to talk about the sugar in today's world that is sort of hypersensitive to sugar.
Oh, definitely. And we've had some debates with customers. I mean, they've been very interesting ones, because a lot of times they'll ask us why we don't use certain sweeteners because they're not derived from sugar. But then it becomes, for us, we want clean ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
I think
Good
that's
point.
More important to us. And then, so if we're using a sweetener that is so highly processed, it's so far removed
from the original.
That's not what I want to use. Like, then I would prefer to use organic cane sugar. As opposed to something that's been really, really, you know, played around with and has turned into a completely different product. And so we get a lot of suggestions about that. And, you know, I have my personal opinions about it.
All right.
I want to go to pure
Well, we have to take a break, but we will talk about that when we get back, because that is a really interesting topic for people to understand. You're listening to Say Yes to the Chef. We'll take a quick break and be right back. This is Say Yes to the Chef. I am your host, Kelly Taylor, along with my co-host, Janice Escott, and our guest today, Danielle White from Chocolaté Confections. And before we left our last conversation, we were talking about sweeteners, and sugar in particular of the sweeteners. And since you make confections, there's a lot of sugar because that's what confections are. And understanding, helping people understand, I guess, why you distinguish between one sugar as a better choice than another sugar and how that sets your candy, I guess, apart from other people's candy. So do you want to talk about a little, we talked a little bit about like buying cane sugar instead of what people will just call white sugar. So why? Why would you do that?
So we don't use refined white sugar for a lot of reasons. It's processed. And a lot of times, too, we have a lot of vegetarian customers, vegan customers. And, you know, a lot of times the way you process refined sugar is with bone. So we stay
You process it with bone.
Yeah. So that's part of the process.
I did not know this.
Yeah.
What do you mean you process it with bone?
So there's part of the process itself where when they're refining it, that they use bones for it. I don't know, like, the actual technical way of going about it. The other thing is artificial sweeteners. There is this misconception that they're healthier than actually going for just cane sugar. We use organic cane sugar for most of our confections. Mm-hmm. We also use non-GMO glucose. And when I make fudge, I use invert sugar.
Which is?
For that. So invert sugar, we use that one because it makes the fudge creamier. It's not as sweet also. So with us, it's more about just clean products, like really going to the root of what it is that we're using as a sweetener, as opposed to adding things to it, processing it, turning it into something else.
I don't really remember. I mean, I know that term invert sugar, but I've forgotten what it means exactly and where you use invert sugar versus regular sugar, non-invert.
We use both. So the invert sugar is liquid, and then we also use the cane sugar, like the crystal one.
And it stays liquid.
Yes.
That's why it's inverted,
yes.
I think. What they've inverted something to keep it liquid rather than dried.
Regular white sugar that you were talking about that comes in, you know, the five-pound bags in the grocery store, those sugars are actually from sugar beets. Mainly, I'm sure you know that. And sugar beets are always GMO.
Yeah.
And so that is one of the reasons that a lot of people are staying away from that sugar now.
I mean, there's GMO is in so many things.
Mm-hmm, it is.
And again, it just really boils down to
genetically modified organisms.
Yeah.
Which is a whole debate that we do not have time for.
Once in a while, when it comes up, it needs to be mentioned.
Yeah.
Yes.
Definitely.
Of course.
And then it's in every ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
everything that you're using, it could be.
You have to research.
Yes. And that's a lot of homework.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so with us, we just want to use clean ingredients that you can pronounce, that you can spell,
yes.
You know, that my grandmother would know what it is nowadays, mm-hmm. my great grandmother would know what it is, and just really going to the source. So when you look at our labels, everything is very basic. It's either cream, and we use local cream, or it's, if we do use corn syrup, it's non-GMO organic corn syrup. We use organic cane sugar. Our chocolate is, or the chocolate that we use is not organic, but I have my whole philosophy about that. It's fair trade. And the way cacao is grown is inherently organic. And then you get into the whole certification conversation about it.
So, how is it inherently organic?
Just the way that you farm it. When the places where cacao comes from, a lot of the cacao that comes from the Dominican Republic, I mean, all these different countries that it comes from, they don't have the money, the resources to really use all of the things that goes into what we now call this traditional farming and spraying. So they do inherently use organic ways of treating their plants, of harvesting, of roasting, and all of that. But it comes down to organic certification in a cacao farm is expensive. So a lot of times these small farms, they don't have the money to pay for the certification, even though they are growing everything organically.
Mm-hmm.
And so there comes, again, that question when we first started of 10, 15 years ago, we didn't really ask where our chocolate came from. We're very conscious of where our cacao comes from.
So you know now where it comes from. Where does your chocolate come from?
Most of it comes from the Dominican Republic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then there's some farms in Peru as well. So they're all small farms. And so there's also this, we're very passionate about making sure that the farmers, the people that are actually growing, harvesting the cacao are compensated and that they're treated fairly. That's important to us.
That's what you mean when you said fair trade.
Fair trade, yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
How do you find these farmers?
Well, the farmers, there is a Rainforest Alliance. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can find fair trade, depending on what it is, because it could be anything from cacao to coffee. Mm-hmm. But there's ways of researching where your chocolate comes from. And the companies, there's big companies. We use Iguitard chocolate, which is the oldest American chocolate company in the country.
Is that on the West Coast?
Yes, yes. It's in California, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in their website, when you go in there, they tell you exactly where their cacao comes from and, you know, their mission and how involved they are in how they source. And I think that's really important. Just knowing where your chocolate comes from is very important. I also have family who owns cacao farms in the Dominican Republic. So it's also, you know, so there is that kind of firsthand also, knowing the whole process of it.
You have family that own, it's funny because it sounded like you kind of got into the chocolate candy making business, not on purpose, but now you have connection, which I think is fascinating.
So how funny is this? I completely forgot that there was this connection when we first got into candy.
Oh.
Because I have an uncle. I mean, I love people that are passionate about things that maybe most of us can't see them as this vision that it becomes. They see it way before. So I have an uncle that has been working on cacao farms and growing that industry in the Dominican Republic for the past 30 years. So this was when, again, no one was asking cacao, yes, organic, fair trade. What does that even mean? Chocolate. And he was so passionate about this. It's been over 3 decades. And I completely lapsed that he was doing that because at that time I wasn't interested. I was like, okay, he works in a farm. It's chocolate, but it's not the chocolate I eat. It's
something we don't quite know what he's doing.
It's not as sweet. So it just didn't click with me until after Matthew did his training. And one of my cousins said, well, you know our uncle does that, right? I was like, oh, my God. Like, it didn't. I had that lapse, and then I was like, wow, this was meant to be.
Yeah.
Always been there.
Yeah. How interesting. Most people do not have an uncle somewhere growing cacao.
We're very blessed with that. So then we have this firsthand someone who has been in it for so long, who knows the ins and outs of it. And
so you're in contact with your uncle now?
Yes.
And you're able to converse with him about what he's doing.
Definitely. And he's such a, so he provides a lot of the cacao for really big companies.
Hmm.
So Nestle, Hershey's, Godiva, like that's kind of their main thing. So he's been doing it for so long. And it's funny because I'll have these simple questions and he's like, his answer is just in a second. He's like, oh yeah, this and that. I'm like, oh, okay.
Like what? What do you ask your uncle about?
There's a lot of things. I mean, one of the things that we were thinking about, and this is a couple of conversations that we've had with him recently, is a lot of times these big cacao farms, they provide the product for big companies. So what happens to the small artisan ones that are not ordering beans by the ton, but still want to work with them? And then also people that are doing it as a hobby that want maybe 10, 25 pounds of beans, but they don't want to do this huge investment. So I was talking to him about that a little bit and like, what does that mean? And he was just kind of walking me through the process of importing and all that goes with that. And I thought that was really fascinating because, again, I never thought about these things. Like, wow, I mean, down to where your chocolate literally comes from, how it's shipped, how it's processed, where does it go? And then we were talking also about environmental factors, too much rain, too much sun, and how that can affect the entire crop.
Mm-hmm.
And cacao isn't something that, it's a temperamental plant. It takes a while for it to bear fruit. So you plant it, and sometimes 5 years later, you're still waiting for that fruit.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. 5 years is a long time to wait for it.
And then what if you're waiting that 5 years, and then you have, like, you know, just this rain that doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And then you...
In the rainforest.
Yeah. I mean, it's so much, and you don't think about these things until... and start talking to someone who's in it. And I'm like, wow, I never really thought that.
People don't think about those things that all the farmers have a challenge as, not just the cacao farmers, but all farmers face these challenges. And we just expect our food to show up.
Yes.
You know?
It's in your plate and you just ask for it and it's there. And then you don't realize like how much it had to travel to come to you.
Yeah. Well, we have to take another quick break and we will be back in just a little bit. This is 97.9 WCHL and Yes to the Chef. Welcome back to Say Yes to the Chef. My name is Kelly Taylor with my co-host Janice Escott, and our guest today is Danielle White from Chocolaté Confections. And when we left off, we were talking about cacao farmers, who just happens to be her uncle, which was great. People don't usually have uncles who are growing cacao somewhere, so that's really cool. I wanted to talk a little bit about what does it look like? What does a cacao plant look like?
So the tree itself, when you go into a cacao farm, it's very beautiful because what you see hanging from it is these pods. And these pods, they're different colors. There's yellow, there's orange, there's red. And then inside the pods, there's a fruit. And it's very interesting because, again, we have this association with chocolate that's already made.
Yes.
But there's a process. There's a process of drying out the beans, drying out the, you know, roasting and not roasting it. Like, there's a whole winnowing it. Like, there's this, which is a kind of a magical process to get to the final product. And the plant itself, I mean, it needs a lot of moisture, some shade, some sunlight. So that's why we don't really grow cacao in this country. I mean, it takes a particular type of environment for the plant to thrive. Mm-hmm. And then it absorbs whatever is in that land. So that's why a lot of times if you buy, let's just say, a bar of chocolate, you'll notice it'll have notes to it. So the chocolate, what I've noticed about the chocolate in the Dominican Republic, it has a stone fruit base to it. Mm. And that's just part of what's in the land. So whatever you grow around it, it somehow absorbs that as well as part of the flavor, sort of the nuance of the...
That's interesting.
It is. How big are those pods that you're talking about? How many inches... About?
I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I think they can be different, but I would think probably like
eight inches or so.
They're long.
Yeah, long and kind of, they're not round like a ball.
They're longer.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And the beans are in there. The fruit. The fruit is the cacao bean that you're taking out of the pot. Is that right?
Well, I know that it has the fruit in it. Now, the seed part, I'm not quite sure where the seed is in there. Mm.
Okay.
Maybe in the fruit somewhere.
Yeah. And then that gets broken open, and then the fruit is what we actually consume.
You can taste the fruit. Then there's a whole process around how they get
and
it to the cacao.
It has to be dried. Mm-hmm. Somewhat like coffee beans.
Yes.
Somewhat like
It's kind of
beans.
Similar to that. Yes, the process is very similar to coffee beans. Mm-hmm. It is.
And then do you know if those are sun-dried or if they're dried by machinery?
I know from what I've seen in other farms, I've seen them dry them in the sun. So let them dry that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because that's a lot of the ways that coffee is actually dried is on great big kind of patio places where they dry in the sun. And that's the advantage of having that fruit growing in an area where there's lots of sun.
Yes.
So that they can dry those beans. Yeah.
And then they come across as cacao beans, and then they're taken by whoever, the chocolatier, and made into chocolate.
Yeah.
That's what the California company is doing.
That's
taking
do.
The beans,
yes.
And turning it from a bean, roasting them, I don't know, whatever they do.
They shell them,
yes.
They roast it. Yes. So then they go through the whole process and they make, and then there's formulation there. There's special machines for that. And then they make their chocolate that way. But they source the beans, yes.
Right, because everyone's chocolate can be a little bit different.
Definitely.
Because they put in different amounts of different things. It's a recipe that they've chosen.
Exactly.
And you will get different types of chocolate. Like you said earlier, chocolate is chocolate is chocolate. Well, we all know that is not true now,
yes.
But most people think that is chocolate. But even, so it starts way back at the farm. So like you were saying, there's these other undertones. So if you got a chocolate from somewhere else and then you turned, or a cacao bean from some other farm, and then you turned that into chocolate, that would be different in itself. But then if you took two different chocolate makers, right, and they each had the same cacao beans, you would still probably end up with a different
chocolate. Different. Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very interesting idea that, so now you have to go and find the right chocolate for you
exactly.
so that you can take it and turn it into what you want it to be.
And a lot of it is also in the recipe and how they process it from their end. Mm-hmm. And that's what's different. And what's really interesting, too, is that depending on the machine, you'll get a different result. Mm-hmm. So if you have a recipe and you use a smaller machine to create your chocolate, it would be very different. You wouldn't be able to replicate that same flavor in an industrial size machine. It's not like you can just duplicate it or it's so it a lot of there's a lot of factors when it comes into the final product itself.
So what is the difference between a dark chocolate and a milk chocolate?
So the dark chocolate has more cacao in it. So
the
concentration
itself.
Of cacao is more, mm-hmm. yes. And mm-hmm. then there's also white chocolate, which has no
cacao.
No.
Yeah.
So it's not really a chocolate.
But where does it get its flavor then?
So it has cocoa butter.
Cocoa
in it.
Butter. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what is the...
But it doesn't have the cacao beans in it.
Okay.
So the higher concentration of cacao, the darker the chocolate will be. And the more pronounced the flavor. So with the milk chocolate, it has more.
Because
so
there are percentages now that they will put on a label, 70% or
yes.
65% or whatever it is.
Yes.
And they say that the higher the percentage, the healthier... Why would that be?
Because it'll be more cacao beans than sugar than, mm-hmm. let's say, if there's dairy or cocoa butter. So there will be a difference in the ratio of it. And the darker the cacao content is, the more antioxidants you'll get.
Okay.
Because that's mm-hmm. really where the health benefit of chocolate is in the antioxidants. So the darker, the healthier it is for you.
Which is most everything is like that, right?
It is.
When you keep the pigment, which... is where I think the antioxidants live in things, right? So if you keep the pigment of whatever, the fruit, the vegetable, then you get more antioxidants.
Like in vegetables would be the darker, brighter colors. Usually.
Yes, like the darker green lettuce
green
versus
or
the
red peppers,
white,
or
you know? Yeah, so it's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
But the confusion, I think, lies for the sort of home cook, and you touched about it, Janice, is the percentages. So the percentage on the package of chocolate means what exactly? If it says 85% or it says 55%, and they're all called different things, bittersweet, semi-sweet, can you help for us to understand a little bit more what those particular labels mean?
So the higher you're going the percentage, the more cacao it will have in it, which will mean it will be less sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to get a more pronounced, a more robust flavor. So I guess it all depends on what are you trying to get out of your chocolate, right? Sometimes we eat chocolate because of the health benefit of it, and you may like, I know people that like 100%.
Wow.
Which is just cacao.
That's very bitter.
That is so, I've
yes.
made it. So I use it.
I haven't ever tasted that.
So I use it for fudge, but it's because mm-hmm. the fudge has the invert sugar. It has the milk, so there's mm-hmm. and cream, so there's other things that sweeten it, and the mm-hmm. sugar. And it comes that we use them in discs, these like little discs. And I have the dark chocolate that we use, which is like a 72%.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have the 100%. And once I made the mistake, I was like, oh, I'm going to eat a piece. And I thought it was the 72% and it was the 100%. Oh, my God, that was so bitter. I was like, oh, wow, that was not
what I thought.
It wasn't pleasant.
Which is funny because people think of chocolate as a sweet thing, right? But in itself, it's just very bitter.
No. And when you think about the Mayans, when they used to do the cacao ceremonies, and they used to do these chocolate drinks.
Drinks,
we
yes.
think it's mm-hmm. like the hot chocolate that we drink now with the marshmallows and all the yumminess and the cream and the whipped cream.
And it's not.
See the Aztecs with their marshmallows.
No way. That was pure cacao. Mm-hmm. So.
That was hard to drink, I bet.
And not only that what happens when you drink something that's that pure, it has other properties to it. I mean, it's really ceremonial in a way. I've had it and it's like, wow, it doesn't have the effect that like a delicious candy bar would have. It's
probably has a high caffeine content, I'm guessing.
Yes.
So that would be something to think about when you're...
yeah. And I think it boils down to what are you trying to get out of it? Do you want a delicious mm-hmm. treat? And then, mm-hmm. or do you just really want the benefits of the chocolate itself? Because mm-hmm. if you don't like it that dark and you buy it, it's almost like you're cringing the whole time you're eating it. Or
you have to add sugar.
Or
I mean, you have
yeah.
to be doing something that you're adding sugar to it yourself, mm-hmm. like when you're making fudge.
It reminds me of espresso, because I like espresso, but you always have to put sugar in it.
Yeah.
And there's different kinds of espresso. Some of it's actually thick when you drink it. And there are are bits of ground beans in the bottom, but you always have to put sugar in it because it's very, very bitter.
All the different cultures will have different sort of ways to handle everything, as they will with chocolate. It's interesting that you talked about, like, way back with the Mayans and the Aztecs and all of that, because I don't think we would ever make do today with the way that they ate their chocolate and drank their chocolate. Most people would not like it. But we have to take another break. And this is Say Yes to the Chef on WCHL 97.9. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back. Welcome back. This is Say Yes to the Chef. I am Kelly Taylor with my co-host Janice Escott. Our guest today is Danielle White of Chocolaté Confections. We didn't give your website out earlier the whole time we've been on the show, and I apologize for that. If anyone wants to check out her deliciousness while we're talking, I'll just see the things that she makes. Do you want to give them your website, Danielle?
Yes, the website is www.chocolatéconfections.com.
And how do you spell chocolaté?
So chocolaté is spelled C-H-O-C-O-L-A-T-A-Y.
And that is an interesting name. I didn't ask how you got to chocolaté.
So our son's name is Mateus, and his nickname is Tay. So chocolaté is a play of the word chocolate in Spanish, which is chocolate. And that's kind of a little ode to my Dominican heritage. And to his nickname, since he was the inspiration of the company, is Tay.
Nice.
So we just kind of married those two together.
That's a nice story. I assumed it was from the, you know, the Spanish origin. And then you just sort of made it American sounding.
Yeah, it was like a little play of words.
But that's not right. So that's interesting. Well, I'd like for you to explain a little bit, too, because there's lots of candy on the market. Tell us what makes your candy different. Obviously, we talked about you using good ingredients. But what else is there that makes your chocolate a little different?
Yeah, so the ingredients are important. We also partner with a lot of local farmers and local vendor ingredients in it as well. The other thing is, there was a movement with chocolate where chocolate got a little bit serious. And it was a lot of chocolate that was coming through was a little complicated, and it was with herbs and spices and all this stuff. And I personally just like delicious chocolate. And for the most part, I try to recreate memories from my childhood when it comes to desserts. And I've noticed that, and Matthew too, we've noticed that when we go back and we have a treat that we used to love when we were younger, it doesn't taste the same.
It never does.
Like the memory never matches up. And it's so disappointing.
It is disappointing.
I went to visit the Dominican Republic, and I'd taken my family, and I told all of them, oh my God, we're going to try this and this and this and this. And I was disappointed every single time. And I think it's a combination of, you know, our palates have refined over time, especially when you're in the food business. And you start to notice the taste of a preservative or something that just shouldn't be there. And that's what lingers in your palate.
A lot of candy is like that.
Yes.
Because there are so many crazy things in candy. That's all you can taste.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we want to recreate simple, delicious treats that we grew up loving and just giving them that modern twist. So our best sellers are our candy bars. We have a coconut bliss bar, an almond bliss bar. So it's a chewy coconut macaroon, a layer of dark chocolate ganache, and we either dip it in dark or in milk chocolate.
That sounds delicious.
Yes. I have some for you guys here. We have the peppermint patties. I never liked peppermint patties.
I love peppermint patties.
I always felt like it left like a weird taste in my mouth. And then we realize, again, preservatives. So we make a peppermint patty that is just smooth and rich and creamy. And all you're left with is like minty deliciousness and just dark chocolate. So that makes it different, is that we're really trying to either recreate nostalgic flavors in a way that's just delicious, that you can eat because you like it. You can share when you're celebrating, and just make it fun. Just make candy fun again.
Yeah, candy should be fun again.
Yes.
We are pretty serious about everything.
I know.
I mean, you know, I'm not saying go eat 300 pounds and neither are you. But, you know, I like to bake things. And there is a place for the sweet stuff in life, you know. It's not that we have to forego all of it. I think we just have to be mindful about when we do eat it. Get the best one that we can, which is what you're doing. You're trying to get the best ingredients and make the best product that you can. And when you enjoy it, you can enjoy it without feeling bad about it, without feeling guilty about it.
That is such a good point, because one of the things that comes up the most when I sell personally at the markets, and Matthew does too, and we love that that direct interaction with our customers.
Then you can answer questions.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And they bring up some really interesting points. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I get a lot is, it has sugar. I can't eat that. I'm on a diet. It has sugar. Mm-hmm. And whenever anyone's open to the conversation and they ask me how much sugar is in it, I'm like, it's not so much how much sugar is in the one item you're eating. Life is all about balance. You're not eating candy every day, all day, and we would never advocate that. So it's all about eat healthy, be balanced, know where your food is coming from, know who makes it, and then you make the best possible choice you can. And if you are going to have candy, just make it good candy and enjoy it, move on, and eat some more vegetables the next time.
And encourage everyone to have treats.
Yes.
I mean, we all deserve treats.
I agree.
Yes, absolutely. And it's...
That's the opposite of every, like, nutritionist. I like it, though. I mean, we do need to have little treats in life. If we take all the good stuff out, then it's pretty boring and dreary. So
that's why people have birthday cakes.
Exactly.
I don't know. I have cakes more often than birthday cakes.
I think I do, too. I think I can always find a reason to celebrate. I mean,
Of course, and that's what it's all about. We really have to be celebratory as often as possible. And there are lots of things to celebrate. It's not just birthdays or whatever. I mean, we can celebrate because the sun's shining.
Because you just had a really good day and things worked out the way you had planned them. And I think that there's so much going on in the world right now that we really should focus more on the good stuff. Mm-hmm. And to me and to Matthew, like, that's what we love the most about making candy. You can't really be upset when you're making candy.
It just or eating candy.
Or eating it, right? So if you're upset, eat some candy and you're fine. Right. It's just one of those things. I mean, you see kids when they eat candy, like our boys, and it's just like this smile and the joy. Mm. Mm-hmm. And it's just, that's what we like. We like being around that.
Yeah, it's nice to be in the business of joy,
right?
Which happens to come in the form of candy.
Yes.
Yes, that's really nice. You've mentioned a couple times that you can find, that you sell at markets. Which markets are you at?
So we sell at the Durham Farmers Market, and that's on Saturdays, and then also at the Chapel Hill Farmers Market. And our website also has an online store. So we ship and we deliver locally.
Oh, that's nice to have it come right to your door.
Oh, yes.
Getting fancy.
So they can find that information on your website.
On the website, yes.
ChocolateConfections.com, correct. Mm-hmm. Well, we have a few minutes left, and I really did hope that you could give just a little tip or a trick for someone who wants to make their own candy at home. And in particular, the one question before we talked, you said people always ask about is chocolate tempering, the tempering of chocolate. So can you just give us a little idea of what that actually means and how to pull that off, why you'd want to temper your chocolate.
Yeah, and the simplified version of that, because this kind of rolls into Matthew's expertise when it comes to the technical part of it. But the simple way to explain it is when you are tempering chocolate, so you can get a piece of candy and you'll notice that it's really shiny and pretty. Mm-hmm. And then you'll notice that sometimes you could buy a chocolate and it has a little gray in it. I used to think that meant it was stale. It just means it's not in temper.
Right.
So if you want to have a nice shiny piece of that has like a really nice snap to it, it's all in how you temper it. And you can do that easily at home in a double boiler. You can do it in you could do it in your microwave. So you take the chocolate. Say you're doing the dark chocolate. You take the amount of chocolate that you want. And I would say like about a third of it you want to put aside because that'll be what's called your seed. So you are melting this chocolate slowly. And when you're melting it, what you're doing is you're breaking off the fatty acids in the cocoa butter.
Mm-hmm.
So you're breaking apart these crystals as it melts. And then you have to restructure them again. So then you have to bring it all back together. And you do that by, as you melt it, you don't want to go over 120 with dark chocolate.
So a good thermometer is important.
Well, a good thermometer, yeah. And there's like the laser one, there's one that you put inside. Mm-hmm. So you want to be there the whole time. And this is where you have to be very mindful of it. You put it in, you go 30 seconds, you stir, you check, you put it in 30 seconds. And as you're getting closer to the 120, then you really have to pay attention because then it could be a difference of 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get to 120, you seed it, you put the other chocolate in, and that melts. And then you have to bring it down to about 89, I would say. And once you do that, then you'll start to, then you have to temper check it. So when you temper check is once it's all melted, it's at down to the temperature that you want, then you can take a spoon and you kind of dip the spoon in, make sure that the chocolate's nice and coating the back of the spoon, let it set. And you'll know that it's tempered if it looks nice, smooth, and shiny. If it doesn't, it just means you have to agitate it more.
Mm-hmm.
So the trick to tempering chocolate is being mindful of the melting, the temperature, and the agitation. the agitation and the fluctuation of temperature is what's going to get you where you need to be.
Well, thank you. That's helpful.
It really is. And there's lots of information right there in those few seconds.
Yes.
Just great. And we're ready to say goodbye. And thank you so much, Danielle. This has been absolutely wonderful. And you have a lot of information to share.
Thank you. This was so much fun.
So please like us on our Facebook page, Yes to the Chef. And for more information and to listen to previous podcasts of this program, be sure to visit our website, www.yestothechef.com. We're co-host Kelly Taylor, natural chef and instructor, and Janice Escott, Cordon Bleu chef and instructor. Happy cooking, Kelly.
Happy cooking, Janice.
And happy cooking, Danielle. Thank you very much for being here with us today.
Thank you.
Have a tomato, Plato. Here's got your Toradora. Oh, Dora. Try the bologna, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. I'll fix your favorite dishes. Hoping this good food will fill you. Stay in the kitchen alone, work my fingers.